Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week. We hope you enjoy the episode. This is really like a niche and nerdy thing that none of you will care about, but we just have to declare because, well, we're recording this episode without any headphones.
And last week.
We did it last week as well.
Yeah.
And you might think, that, okay, cool, like who cares? It fundamentally changes the podcast recording experience for me.
And me.
I don't feel like we're recording a podcast. I feel like we're having a bit of an awkward conversation in a room sort of really far apart.
Although this is what these podcasts are based on, mate. This is how
awkward conversations.
No, this is how we thought about having a podcast.
Yeah, no,
because
fair.
We used to have these conversations,
and
people
who watch these episodes on our YouTube channel or over on Recast often say, like, why are you wearing headphones? It's weird.
It makes a huge difference.
It makes a massive difference to the recording experience. You get absorbed by the conversation.
It doesn't go into the privets.
Yeah, and it's easier to hear when one of us wants to say something. You can give each other space and time, and it focuses you on what you're saying. And I forget my words even easier without headphones.
Right.
But yeah, anyway, I'll explain where they are. Well, there's a boring, long story as to why we haven't got them. They're basically locked in a boot somewhere, but I'll get them back eventually.
I mean, to be fair, this is probably something we should have addressed last week because we didn't have them last week.
I actually did order a replacement set.
Did you?
They didn't turn up. So, and I even went to Currys this morning to buy another replacement set. Yeah, Currys still exists. Who knew in the UK? But they don't have the right adapter for my thing. So anyway, I say really nerdy niche complaint that people are going to be like, what are you on about? But we have to say it because we feel a bit odd. We feel a bit strange.
We are perfectionists.
We are. Oh, we just like the sound of our own voices. And that's what we get through the headphones. How are you, mate?
I'm all right.
You all right? You're coping with this muggy heat that we've got in the UK?
I like the hot weather. So,
but this is not like nice hot weather. This is muggy. Muggy weather.
Yeah.
It's close. Like my skin is perspiring. I'm perspiring in places that I don't want to be. Like it's just all a bit
tight. Close.
Yeah, close.
Yeah.
Do you? I was going to ask this question. I thought, is that too much information? Do you wear a lot of clothes at home in this weather? Like, are
no,
you someone?
I don't wear a lot of clothes at
in
home
general.
Anyway. No, because it's weird because I like the summer. But I don't like being hot.
Yeah, okay. So you'll get home and it just all comes off.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
yeah, I'll
cruising
put,
around.
I'll put a pair of shorts on or a light top or something.
You're a fan of shorts. I like wearing clothes in general. People have a go at me quite a lot because in videos I'm like, oh, guys, it's 35 degrees, I'm dying. And then I'll be in like
a
long sleeve shirt and a jumper. And, yeah, it's kind of like my go-to at Le Mans, which we're going to talk about a lot.
But I've seen your legs, so I'm glad you don't wear shorts.
Well, that's rude. My mum always said I could be a hand model, to be fair. She never said I could be a leg model, so you might be on something there. But yeah, even at Le Mans at the weekend, it was super, super hot and I was wearing a hoodie most of the time.
But it was raining, mate.
Yeah. That's why I was wearing the hoodie, mate. Right. I wanted to be prepared, but it did mean that I was sweating more than usual. So yeah, for those of you not in the UK at the moment, we have nice temperatures finally, like spring/summer has begun, but it just is all a bit close and muggy. And like, is this low pressure or high pressure?
No idea.
Okay, well, it's pressure.
All I keep hearing all the while is global warming. It's getting too hot. I would say this is summer. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, yeah, it's 29, 30 degrees, whatever it is. It's called summer, no? I mean, it's June.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining that we finally have some nice weather.
Yeah.
I'm like super excited for the months ahead. I'll be honest, I'm not in the mood to wade into a bit of a semi-political climate activist conversation this morning.
Nor am I, I just want to bring it up.
Just leave that bombshell and move on. Yeah, fine, out. There we go.
Get out.
Climate change ain't real. No, joking. Sorry, let's focus. So yes, at the weekend, I attended the Le Mans 24-hour, not just any regular Le Mans 24-hour race, the centenary event. 100 years of nutters driving around a track for 24 hours.
How do you say Le Mans?
Le Mans,
yeah.
It's not Le Mans, because it's, I don't think, I am not French, but it's not Les Mans, and you don't pronounce the S at the end. It's Le Mans.
Or Le Mans.
Or Le Mans. Le Mans? Le Mans.
Le Mans.
Le Mans. Le Mans. Hey, let's go with Les Mans. I did hear a few Americans, and bless you guys, walking around. Hey, it's so great to be here at the Le Mans. Le Mans centenary. They also have a great time at the Tail of the Dragon. But 100 years of Le Mans. It's a race that I really wanted to attend for multiple reasons.
You've never been before?
I have.
Oh.
I went in 2017.
I've never been.
Oh, you've never been full stop?
I've never been, no. I mean, I know a bit about it, but...
Oh, well, this is going to be very interesting. Did you watch any of it this weekend?
I watched bits of it.
Okay.
I watched the start, I watched a little bit in between, and then I watched the end.
Okay, so this is going to be interesting. So you're aware of it. You haven't been. You've watched bits of it. What doesn't appeal to you about it? Because I know you watch a lot of quite niche motorsport. We don't talk about it a lot here on the podcast, and people might not be aware that you watch a lot of touring cars, and you watch a lot of the Junior Formula and Carrera Cup and stuff.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So what is it about Le Mans that's never really appealed to you?
Well, I just don't really know a great deal about it. It's an endurance race as well, isn't it? So it's not like... race for 45 minutes or an hour and a half and you get an outcome. It's like, literally, I know some people, like, they'll watch every minute of it on the television. They'll stay up and sit in their living rooms, and, you know, you get people that go there religiously every year and they sleep in a tent. And I mean, to be fair to Archie, I only really know about Le Mans because of him, because he's raced in it.
So, and his grandfather, obviously one of the icons of Le Mans 24 Hour.
Of course, yeah. So the stuff I really know about Le Mans is because of Archie.
Interesting.
So, I never really used to pay any attention at all before I met Archie, like, at all.
So, look, I'm sort of with you. So originally, or historically, I would have said that I was aware of its historic importance. I definitely liked the history of it in the early 50s and 60s years, and obviously the Ford versus Ferrari story, and some iconic, you know, McLaren F1, Porsche 917, like, so many iconic cars that have come from Le Mans, and how Le Mans has helped build the brand of companies like Porsche, some of the Japanese, like Mazda, Toyota, that have had success, the McLaren F1 story. Yeah. So lots of reasons why I like the idea or the title of the race, but... I very rarely watched it. You know, I would kind of watch the highlights or watch the final or be aware of who won, but I wouldn't really watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went in 2017, and I'm fairly sure at the top level, which was LMP1 at the time, it was probably only, I think it was Toyota and Porsche were the only two really competitive teams. I'd have to double check that.
No, I think you're right.
Check that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think 2016 is the year when Toyota won lost on the final lap, I think.
Right.
So please fact check me in the comment section below if I'm getting these dates wrong, people. But yeah, so, and not only was it just those two teams, but it was of an era where after lap two, the field spread was 20 or 30 seconds. You just kind of had to sit by and wait for it all to kind of play out. Because you say it's a 24-hour
endurance race, yeah.
So somebody overtakes someone on lap 132.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh my God, it's an overtake for the lead, because you've still got 16 hours to go.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
anything can happen. And so, yeah, it was, yeah, not one that I immediately sort of thought,
yeah,
you know, can't wait for. And especially, I think Toyota won the last 6 years or so.
They've been the dominant force for 5 or 6 years. Yeah, I know that much. And then I think, like, it was Porsche before then, and I think all these...
Audi had a huge run. I think,
yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, so... I think, yeah, because of that, I just was never that gassed about watching or attending.
Back then as well, mate, you wasn't as a Porsche enthusiast as you are now. That's yeah, been fair,
good point. Very good point.
And Ferrari haven't been in it.
Well, okay, so then here we go.
Segway.
Thank you.
Getting good at this, aren't I?
You are a pro. Obviously, we now have this new era of endurance racing with the hypercar class. And we've been talking about it a lot on this podcast, and everything that's brought... Or that's come with that, including, yes, some of our favourite manufacturers, but also more recognisable manufacturers. And it's the same thing for Formula One. When you have a brand, a team, a manufacturer that you can support, that you know, or you can drive away that evening, it makes your investment in the race so much higher.
Yeah, yeah, win on a Sunday, sell on a Monday.
Well, that's exactly the theory, yeah. Or at least what Lawrence Stroll is claiming is happening at Aston Martin. And so, yeah, so this year...
They won anything yet?
Aston Martin?
Yeah.
Not no. Formula One, no, but they're winning strategy.
They're competing.
They're competing, yeah. So yeah, it's not compete on a Sunday, sell some on a Monday.
Sell something.
Yeah.
Shares mostly.
Shares, literally, apparently. Or his that he's selling. Anyway, that's a whole other story for a whole other podcast. So yeah, so we got Ferrari, Porsche, Toyota still there, Peugeot. Next year we've got Lamborghini, Alpine, BMW. You have smaller teams, but still semi-recognizable in the world of racing, Glickenhaus,
yeah, yeah.
Van der Waal and things like that. So
they've done all right, didn't they, this year?
Glickenhaus did great, but we're going to get into that. So yeah, so I was immediately excited when that class got announced. And of course, Ferrari returning to endurance racing. I'm like, oh yeah. And I thought, okay, the centenary event of the Le Mans 24 Hour, that's a race I want to attend. It's going to be a big event. And then on top of that, we've got this new hypercar class and Ferrari and other teams, Porsche, competing, you know, at the top level.
Yeah.
I then went to Spa during the Podium Tours rally. That was my first taster of this new era. And I was like, oh my God, this is even better than I could have expected. Like, these cars look amazing. They sound great. It's so much fun to be here being like, woo, go Ferrari! Like, you know, it's like, it's, I'm invested. And I was like, okay, well, no matter what now, I've got to get to that Le Mans event somehow. And then huge thanks to Peugeot. They came through with the invite of all invites. Come for a VIP extravaganza. Join us for all 3 days. I actually was there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Wow.
In our hospitality, we'll put you up in a mansion, shuttle you back and forth, give you a car to drive down. Like, oh, I was like, hello.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, so went off with like all the expectations. But I'll be honest, the expectations for just a great event, I wasn't necessarily going being like, oh, it's going to be like a mega race. It's going to be interesting, but I know it's going to be an exciting event. Going into it, I believe most of us thought Toyota would still kind of romp away with the victory.
Right.
Because so far this year, and again, please fact check me, audience, you're so good at doing that, Ferrari have kind of qualified at the front. They've had great single lap pace, and then the race kind of faded away and Toyota have just romped away with it. That's the F1 car. Yeah. Well, actually, Paul and I just did an F1 podcast talking a lot about like the kind of, well, how, why Ferrari nail the World Endurance Championship and absolutely fail at Formula One these days.
So. I can tell you, there's always a theory with Ferrari as well. While they're making good road cars, the Formula One teams and the endurance teams, they're never any good. When they make crap road cars, then the F1 teams and all the endurance teams are flying.
Well, but vice versa. So I think don't put endurance with that.
Right.
Because endurance are the road cars, essentially. Like, they've been in the GT class for so long, it's just been 488 LMS.
Challenge, or, yeah.
You know, so they've been variations of the road cars. It's just, yeah, you're right. Road cars do well. Formula One team sucks, is the Ferrari trend.
Yeah.
But somehow, in and amongst that, nope, they deliver a really quick hypercar for the endurance championship. But yeah, so we all went, I think, going, okay, fine, you know, Toyota are going to... It's going to probably still be a bit of a walkover. The race began, Ferrari 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And what you missed, mate, is I'm not even joking, for 16 hours, it was flat out. I don't know what happened, but the drivers and the teams acted like it was a 24-hour sprint race. Like, lap 30... You've got Ferrari teammates forcing each other into the wall. You've got drivers overtaking on the grass. People plowing into each other. Like, they were racing so hard. I actually don't remember a race I've enjoyed watching that much for years. Like, genuinely, because even Formula One, at its best, a highly entertaining race, firstly, has its peaks and troughs because of strategy, but it's an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Mate, this was flat out. Like you have really missed out on not watching this, because this would have been right up your street, mate. Like, because not only were they sprint-style racing from the flag dropping, but there was so much intrigue because immediately people split strategies and your head just goes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're like, well, I have no clue now how this is going to shuffle out. Like, who's in the lead? Who's actually in the lead? Who's got more pit stops?
Yeah.
You can fuel for different, like, so confusing.
Yeah.
But as a spectacle, it was mind-boggling. Because on top of that, I was there going, okay, I've got Ferrari, obviously, super excited at the front. That's my team. Like, I want them to do well. Porsche, yeah, okay, we're here. And then Peugeot, I was with them, and they're the kind of underdogs. It's so much fun when you're supporting an underdog.
Well, they were winning at one point, no?
That's what I mean. And that's the best. In motor racing, I had a few comments from people being like, oh, why are you going with Peugeot? Like, you could have gone with a better team. Firstly, I'm going with whoever invites me.
Like, can I tell you, by the way, Peugeot are one of the biggest manufacturers in the world of cars.
Well,
they're
firstly,
huge PSA group.
Huge. Aren't they part of Stellantis now? They're part of Stellantis.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
you can't believe that. I mean, they own Vauxhall.
Massive.
Huge, mate.
But also, like, I'm not going to sit there and be like, I've been invited to Le Mans by Peugeot? No, thank you. Like, yeah. Unless I get invited by Ferrari or Porsche, I'm not going.
Which is what I'd say.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
That invite came in. I was like, I'm on my way.
I'm coming.
But also, as I said, like, I've experienced it before with various levels of motorsport. If you go with an underdog team and they start doing well, it is way more exciting than going with Toyota and just putting your head in your hands when they start losing. Yeah. So, they're with Peugeot. And as you say, like, even at moments during the race, they started leading. Mm-hmm. Like, we had these crazy parts with rain and then different strategies, and then there were people crashing out. And that's what's amazing, because it's such a long race. Drivers just lose attention or, you know, their focus. And you genuinely, towards the very end, when you had, after 18, 19, 20 hours, Toyota and Ferrari separated by less than 15 seconds on track, the Toyota driver locks up his rears and goes off and basically ends the race. And like, as far as I know, that was driver fault. It could have been a mechanical issue, but it was, as I say, one of the best races I've ever had the opportunity to watch live or on TV.
Yeah. What I like about Le Mans as well is one, the different level of drivers because of the different categories. I mean, that's why there's so many crashes, mate, because obviously you've got gentleman drivers in there as well, right?
Less than before, but yes.
Yeah. So you get a gentleman driver that could be someone like me and you, essentially. I mean,
the gentleman drivers are essentially paying for their seat. They're not pros, they're AMs.
Correct.
Amateurs.
Yeah.
So they're classed differently, but they're on track at the same time as Antonio Giovinazzi, ex-Formula One driver, driving the works Ferrari hypercar.
Correct. So that's how the crashes happen.
But it's unfair.
I mean, it's brilliant.
It's pretty, well, and we should get into the crashes, actually. But to call them, like, they are still really good drivers, these people, and they're not rocking up for, like, the first time and going,
no,
I'll pay $450,000 just to do Le Mans this weekend. Like,
it's £2 million.
I mean, they do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're not literally...
There's always a first time for everyone, though, mate.
Yeah, a first time at Le Mans, for sure.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't... It's not literally like these guys are clueless idiots on the track. It's just the fact that, as you say, you've got such differing levels of speed and then experience.
The closing speeds, of course.
Oh, God. Yeah. So I think a lot of the pro drivers end up in big bashes. And even... So many of the top tier drivers in the hypercar class that have to be super pro made big mistakes.
Yeah.
Made big, big mistakes.
But that happens at all levels of sport, though, don't they? They do make mistakes. Just pros in general make less mistakes. And they're right on the edge.
According to this year's Le Mans, they didn't. But yeah, I agree. Like,
you know,
they were
mean?
Making more mistakes than anyone. Yeah. But you're so right. And that insanity of the difference in classes from, what are the G or what the outgoing LM. Oh, I forget all the bloody names. LM, GTE, PAM, Pro. basically the 488s and the Vantages and the 911s.
They're all going, aren't they?
So yeah, they're all going. They're getting GT3 class next year. But from them up to the hypercar class, you know, especially in the high speed stuff, it's insane. But if you get a hypercar car closing on a gaggle of GT cars who are all racing for them, it's mad to watch.
Yeah.
LMP2 is slightly pointless this year. They're going as well.
Similar speed to the hypercars, right? And I believe they've actually been turned down, because if you turn an LMP2 car down, it does similar lap. If you turn it up, it does similar lap times to the hypercar.
Maybe, because the hypercars are, I think, 5 or so seconds slower than the old LMP1 class.
Yeah, so they've turned they backed the LMP2 car off because it's just as fast.
Yeah, potentially. So, but they just felt like they got in the way this year. I'll be honest, they got very little coverage and just seemed like they were getting in the way. But I think that's because this hypercar class was so exhilarating. Like, honestly, I couldn't believe how hard and how close these guys were racing for 23 hours.
I think Ferrari do that a bit as well, by the way. Whenever they enter a race, there's always more excitement because of the heritage of the brand. You know, I think whenever they enter a race, you know, like how many times has it been said over the years, like you take Ferrari out of F1, F1 isn't really anything without Ferrari.
But is Ferrari anything without F1? Those brands are so intrinsically linked.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? We're never going to know that because they're probably never going to leave, and it's never going to be a problem. But there's always, like, you know, from what I saw from the TV, that all the Ferrari fans and the flags that you see over the weekend, I mean, they've not been there for 50 years.
Well, this is the whole thing, right? So I think you're right that the interest level spiked.
Of course,
you know, like,
yeah.
Because, you know, if Ferrari get involved, it insinuates like this is serious now. This is proper top level racing, a Ferrari involved. Yeah. And the question is, or the question was, did Ferrari come back with that sole goal of like, we're winning Le Mans? Like, we are building a car to win Le Mans. Because, you know, they've been there or thereabouts this year in the other races within that championship, bedding in, but hadn't really delivered. It's almost as if they have this sole focus. And it's an incredible story. And obviously, since then,
like Ford in the 60s.
Yeah. It's that similar. We are coming to win. Yeah. Like, and that is our sole focus. And then obviously they can run riot with that story of, you know, ask a child to paint a race car or a car and it's red. And, you know, because, Ferrari is synonymous with racing and everyone wants Ferrari to win. You know, you were sitting there, no matter which team you were supporting. I mean, I guess even the Toyota people, well, they might have a bit of pill to swallow, but I think everyone wanted to see that story for Giovinazzi, you know, XF1 driver, for Collado, who's been in that Ferrari family for a long time, for Guidi. Like, it was a great, great story for the centenary, for Le Mans, for the world of racing.
Yeah.
But as I say, it was the competitiveness throughout the field.
Yeah.
Competitiveness that didn't come from Porsche.
Which is, we spoke briefly about this on WhatsApp. I mean, that is so unusual because Porsche are normally the best at endurance races. Whenever you look at their, you know, like when they do the Nürburgring, what the Spa, they're always there or thereabouts. In just the last couple of years, they've just fallen off. And one of my favourite tin top drivers, Kevin Estra, who I always look for because I just think he's, for a tin top driver, he's incredible. And I always look for him, you know, when he's racing. I mean, they were just nowhere.
I think the thing which is bizarre is, as far as I know, Porsche have competed in Le Mans for every year that Porsche have existed.
Right.
Actually, that's a lie, because their first car came out 1953, no, for 75 years. Anyway, whatever the 356 was, the 356, and then it was, I think it was 3 or 4 years later that they
75
entered.
75 years is 48, isn't it?
And then they entered in 51 in Le Mans. So, okay, so since 51, they competed in every single year since then. So they've always been there or thereabouts. And you say, like, it's a big part of their brand and their statement and what they say about GT cars and everything like that.
Yep.
And this hypercar class, they seem to have just gone a little bit wrong. They've built a car which they're selling on. Other teams can buy and have bought over in IMSA as well, and obviously for the World Endurance Championship. But the factory cars being run by Penske, I'll be honest, just, they haven't looked competitive, I don't think, all year in the championship. And then they turn up to Le Mans, and I'll be honest, at no point in that race did they really look like they were troubling the podium positions. The
quick boys, yeah.
The quick boys, you know, Cadillac are really, I mean, look at Cadillac with the V-Series after our Escalade experience. Go on. But the Cadillacs looked and sounded amazing. And Porsche were like sort of half-arsedly fighting them. And there were some great shots of the Porsches on track. But I never at one point sat there going like, come on, Porsche. Yeah. The whole time I was like, come on, Ferrari. Or yeah, like, come on, Peugeot. But I never felt like I'd get that excited about Porsche. And even in the GT class, like the old 911 RSRs weren't, I mean, the Iron Dames were doing well, but they didn't really feel the really
Corvette,
in
Corvette one.
Corvette, then Aston, and then 911 was in third place. So, yeah, a bit weird that, because I would have said Porsche's heritage, history, racing program is way more focused on endurance and Le Mans than Ferrari.
Yeah, of course.
Except Ferrari hadn't done it for 50 years. Yeah. There was no great expectation of Ferrari returning to endurance racing. They had to win, but at the centenary event, if any brand was going to be wholly focused on winning that race, I would have thought it was Porsche, and it just felt like they fell really short.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ferrari won, didn't they win the 24-hour Nürburgring in the 296? I think they won that as well recently.
The 296 GT3 or whatever.
Yeah, the 296 GT3, oh, wow. I think that was a few weeks ago.
Potentially.
So, fact check me, but I'm sure I saw that.
Okay.
As in, so that would be another hint that they're going endurance. And normally, like, you know, Porsche are dominant and stuff like that. And Mercedes have been very good at endurance and that sort of in the like a Black Series. They've been very good at that over recent years. So
I think it's going to be fascinating to see, because, you know, we're all reveling in this moment, and it's great and it's exciting that Ferrari have finally won something big that we can all get excited about. And I'm absolutely certain, and we'll talk about it in 2 seconds, that we're going to be getting some 499p edition somethings and,
oh, mate,
and Le Mans liveries and badges, and, you know,
100%
all of our cars have just gone up 25 grand.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that in 2 seconds. Yeah. But yeah, I think Porsche probably need to pull their finger out a bit, because it was a weak showing, and, you know, I really, considering it's their 75th anniversary and there's all this noise going on, I was like, I'd be at board level. How have they kind of let this happen? Like, and next year we've got Lamborghini, Alpine, BMW, like loads more manufacturers entering the fray. If Porsche start losing to them as well, you're like, well, come on, what does that say about your overall mission statement and who you are and what you do? If you're then failing at the kind of one race that is so tied to your history and heritage.
Yeah.
But, let's go back to that. So Ferrari, now we know they've done this victory. They're going to milk it because, you know, not much success happening in Formula One these days. And, well, not much success anywhere else. So,
apart from the fact they sell all their cars.
Yeah, okay, road cars, great success.
So how much more success do you want than that?
Do we expect, and what will it look like, some kind of what? Le Mans livery? Are they going to put the badge back? Remember the F1 World Titles badge? Are we going to get a Le Mans 2023 centenary badge in all the models for the next 12 months, or will there be a special run out? Like, they're going to do something. It's Ferrari.
They'll do something.
I mean, they probably already had something waiting in the wings.
Yeah, a long time ago, yeah.
What could we see? What would you...
Well, but I wouldn't mind betting there will be some sort of limited edition car coming out of it, for sure.
Yeah.
One of 499. They already know who they're going to give them to. They're already sold. But they'll make something, because that's another 20 million or 50 million or however many hundreds of millions they can make out of that. It'll be based on a V12 car or car they've already got. And they'll basically just wave the flag and done it, haven't they?
Yeah, and I'll go, I'll have that one.
Yeah, done it, haven't they?
But so I was there. I lived and breathed the moment. I got way too overcarried away. I sung Italian songs the whole way home to the Eurotunnel. Like, you know, I was like, oh my God, I love Ferrari, the best of them. I want 10 more. But as someone who was back here in the UK, not necessarily that interested, thinking that Le Mans would follow the same sort of protocols, but then seeing Ferrari won, like, how does that sit for you as a Ferrari fan, owner, customer? Like, are you like, oh, great. Like, does that have any significance to you? Does that change or make you proud or get you excited about the future? Or is it just like, oh, cool, like they won?
I couldn't care less.
Really?
I could not care less. I don't know how many Ferraris I've had over the years. I've been lucky enough to have all the ones that I want. And I still keep buying them.
Mm.
I couldn't, unless the product fouls, or it's, you know, it then becomes not good anymore in terms of it breaks or, you know, it's just not a good product anymore, I'll stop buying it. But I could, I mean, the racing heritage is cool, obviously. But I never really started liking Ferrari because of the racing heritage. I started liking them because I liked this red car when I was a kid. So I think we told that story before and how we both liked it. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's the pinnacle of car ownership, in my opinion. It's the glamour brand. And if you can have the best, why not?
So if they won the F1 World Championship,
yeah,
would that make you feel any different?
I'd be fuming because I want Lewis to win it again.
So there's not an element of Ferrari pride. I'm just talking about in general. Like, you know, in a like, it doesn't matter who the drivers are. This could be in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, 6 years ago. Does it play any more of a role in your life if Ferrari went on a dominant run or won the world championship? There's not part of you
as
I
care about the car.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I literally care about the car.
So even a Formula One dominant era wouldn't make you feel any more proud or excited about the brand or anything?
No, because I've been buying them for 12 years now.
Mm.
Have they won Formula One in that time?
No.
Well, there you go then.
Hey, look, I get it.
I'm already proud. I'm already proud I've got one.
Yeah.
I'm proud of myself that I've been able to buy a few.
So the brand stands alone from the racing, which I think we've known for a while, whilst it built itself on racing.
Yeah.
And as did Porsche and Aston Martin in some ways and Jaguar, like built themselves on racing, but now completely stands alone. And of course, there'll be so many other owners and customers like you who have no idea that Ferrari won Le Mans at the weekend. I don't really care. Well, they'll see an article and be like, cool, I got one of those.
No, I would definitely be aware that they'd won it, obviously, but I wouldn't care less. And actually, while you're talking about Porsche, while you bring Porsche in, this is going to sound absolutely ridiculous coming out of my mouth, like most things. I associate motorsport more with Porsche than I do with Ferrari.
So the fact that Porsche did so badly and are doing so badly, does that diminish your view of Porsche at all?
No, not one iota, because their GT product cars are just about the best cars on the market for the money. I mean, pound for pound, they're incredible. They've always, down the years, they've always punched above their weight. They've always been the every man on the streets sports car, essentially. So Ferrari's seen a little bit different, in, you know, the sort of customer that goes into Ferrari. And that's why
it's a luxury item, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why some people prefer Lambo, because they don't like the stigma that's attached to a Ferrari or Ferrari customer. I don't happen to like the stigma that's attached to a Lambo or a Lambo customer, but everyone's different in the way they perform, and then some people don't like either of them two brands and they go and buy a McLaren, and then they get recaptured very quickly.
Well, let's not start that conversation again. But this is okay, so I find this fascinating, right? Because I don't think you're alone. As I say, these brands now have definitely separated themselves. Their road car products, they've separated from their racing program. But within that, why are they then racing? Because of course, you can say technical development, R&D, pushing products forward because it's part of their DNA.
That's exactly why.
But a huge part of it is why it's marketing. Like a lot of the reasons why a lot of these brands race is purely for marketing. Like, and you said it already, win on Sunday, sell on Monday. And that's the big, big avenue that Lawrence Stroll is going down with Aston Martin. But maybe it's that if you win a big event, so maybe today, lots of non-Ferrari customers, but wealthy individuals, are calling up their Ferrari dealers saying, oh, I want to buy an F8 Tributo now because, well, I want to buy a 296.
Sorry, sir, we ain't got one.
Well, yes.
Sorry, sir, we ain't got one.
Clever from Ferrari, that. Yeah. I want a Rolex Daytona Le Mans edition and a 296 in 499B livery. Can't have either, sir.
Yeah.
But so maybe it's good at raising awareness for the bystander.
Yeah.
But those who are already fans of the brand or the product or already own it, maybe it doesn't have the same effect. It's really hard because I'm someone who loves the racing heritage and the story. And there is a part of me that looks at Porsche being like, it's a bit embarrassing, guys. Like, what's going on? Like, that does diminish a little bit a part of at least Porsche's motorsport brand at the moment, I think. Whereas Ferrari, I'm like, well, proof in the pudding, Ferrari, you can do it right. You can still win stuff. You can turn up and win. And all of that emotion and success and history and everything is re-enlightened inside of me. But you're right. I mean, I've bought and will buy and want to own Ferraris aside from their success.
Of course.
You know, they haven't had any for a while.
And both of them brands, no matter what they're doing on the racetrack, they both make such incredible products now for their customer. I mean, it is amazing, and technology is has a big say in that. Like, I truly believe that they do motorsport. One, marketing's a big thing, and it's very good advertising as well. Like, when you think, like, the McDonald's and Coca-Cola have to advertise anymore? Probably not, but they still do because it keeps it fresh in people's mind. And that's probably a really big reason why they continue to be at the forefront of motorsport, because it keeps it fresh in people's mind. If they win, it's good. Even if they don't win, people still talk about it.
Oh yeah, and Ferrari will milk this Le Mans victory for 12 months.
They will, just like Porsche have in the past. This is snobbish. I don't understand, apart from the R&D, I don't understand why Toyota do it. Because apart from the GR department, which make the Yaris, obviously, which they had to make for homologation, and then that car didn't end up being built anyway. They made a load of cars that didn't make them any money, apparently. And the little GR86 thing and the Supra, essentially. Does that really help them sell cars being...
I put my hand up like in a school. Paul and I had this big conversation leaving Le Mans.
Did you?
Because over and above that, I don't think we saw at any point over the weekend Toyota fans. Mm. We saw Alpine fans. They're not even competing in hypercar class yet. Yeah. You know, of course, Ferrari, Peugeot, like, and groups of cars, convoys. It's not like we saw like a GR Yaris owners club driving in. But, I think we underestimate the power, the appeal, and the brand value of GR and Toyota in Japan. So firstly, I went to Toyota World during Drive the World. GR back then in 2019, before it became its powerhouse that it is, was already way more of an AMG RSM than we ever expected.
In Japan?
In Japan, you can get GR lines on everything.
Right, okay.
There's GR line Prius, which had like crazy wheels and it was lowered suspension and wings, like every single car you could have GR parts on. The GR brand is now filtered across, yeah, here to Europe with these special editions to try and really solidify this is what GR is. But I think within Toyota and maybe other parts of the Asian market, that was already a power play. So I think that's why they've taken GR, Gazoo Racing, to play off Gazoo Racing, the people who run the Le Mans program. Look how successful that is. That's why GR is the badge we want to go for, right, and the department that are going to be. So
they're still building their brand, whereas Porsche and Ferrari are already there, basically.
I think they're building their brand in Europe.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But obviously in Japan, Ferrari and Porsche will already be prominent there because they're worldwide brands, whereas obviously GR are prominent in Japan, but they need to get it over here.
Well, I think it's the famous story with the McLaren F1, which this had been told to me by various people, but might be diluted. So again, help me out, audience. I believe that McLaren F1 was so popular in Japan because obviously it had a big Japanese sponsor when it won its first victory, and there was an association with Japan and that car. That's why so many sort of went over to Japan. And so I think Toyota for sure, they've got their own strategy, which maybe we don't see enough of. Like, so why most of their drivers are Japanese, and you know, it's a lot of that sort of home
target
heritage,
a different
that,
market, basically.
But over and above that, Toyota have been very vocal for a long time now that they are not jumping on this big EV bandwagon. They've come out and said a lot of times that they're pushing really hard with hydrogen.
Yeah.
And we know there's going to be hydrogen tech from next year onwards. Like, they're pushing big in that direction. There was actually a demonstration lap of a hydrogen sort of LM car before the start of the race, spewing out vapors, vapors out of the back. So I think I could see how Toyota would say that they're genuinely using motorsport as a testbed for smaller, more efficient engines, more strong engines that can last longer. You can do 24 hours at this pace, so therefore our engines will do 200,000 miles on the road without a blink. You know,
I think they're all doing that, mate.
Yeah, but I think that's part of Toyota's brand identity a lot more. Efficiency, longevity, quality of parts, blah, blah, over and above Ferrari, which is like speed.
Yeah.
So I think that's why Toyota have been doing it so long. I could be wrong, and it's
a different strategy on how they box it up, essentially.
Yeah,
Ferrari will sell it on speed, and Toyota will make it reliability and robust. And
I would assume. Any Japanese listeners, let us know in the comment section below if you see a lot of GR and Le Mans marketing in Japan. I'm sure you do.
It obviously works, mate, because they wouldn't do it for
they're not spending money for the sake of it.
They are. Doing it to get their brand out there, and it's the age old thing why they all do them Nürburgring lap times.
Yeah, of marketing. Course. It's all marketing. It's worked because here we are talking about the race after it's taken place and what a race it was. But it was surrounded by a lot of other excitement and activity. So a few sort of car launches, I suppose, or car reveals, maybe. I saw that Alpine hatchback.
I wonder if we would have spoken about it at this depth and length though if you hadn't been, because we've been doing this podcast 5 or 6 years now, 5 years probably, and this is the first year we've really ever spoke about Le Mans.
Because I would say yes, because I was always going to watch the race,
right,
because of how excited I was about this class. I think this new era,
why was you excited?
Because of the company or the teams taking part, say Ferrari, Porsche, Peugeot, brands that I recognised, could get behind, could understand, could support. The relative closeness in racing that we have seen at the races so far.
Yeah.
The taste I got at Spa, the drivers I recognised, the fact that it was a centenary. So I was always going to watch.
Okay.
And I think if you sat down and watched the first hour, you were going nowhere.
Right.
Because it was so absolutely like, oh my God, where in every other year when I've given it a shot, as I say, 10 laps in, you're like, okay, well,
yeah,
I'll just tune at the end and see what happened.
Yeah, fair.
Where this, I kind of didn't want to go to sleep because I was like, anything could happen overnight. But yeah. I was like, well, we have to. And also, Paul wants to go home and we were showing the car. So, but you're right. But so I asked, there was a Q&A with the Peugeot drivers, and it was probably a fairly obvious question to ask. But I said to them, I was like, I'm sure you would all have said, we want to win Le Mans as a race to win. It's a very important thing for you as a career and blah, blah.
Of course.
But having these manufacturers involved, does it increase your excitement or desire to be in this form of racing? Because all of them do everything else. I mean, DiResta's on TV most of the time. Jean-Eric Vergne is racing Formula E and in and out of Goodwood Revival. So they're always different categories. Yeah. But was there more of a motivation to get into a hypercar? And they said yes. They said the desire across the board from sports car races to get a hypercar seat is through the roof.
Right.
And with all these new teams coming next year, the amount of drivers like really trying to position themselves for factory race seats because it carries more weight. Mm. You know, Giovinazzi is the prime story, you know, theoretically booted out of F1 in inverted commas. No space at the top table, sir, even though he's part of the Ferrari program. Ferrari kind of scoop him up and say, come on, mate, you know, we'll let you have a drive in the endurance car. Like, that's your sort of, you know, consolation prize.
And he's quick enough.
Sorry?
And he's quick enough.
And
he's quick enough.
Quick enough. Yeah. I mean, he's a proper driver.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they wouldn't give him the seat if he's not quick enough.
He's serious, but falls out from F1, if he had just ended up in an LMP2 car or a GT car and won the class, it wouldn't have the same headlines, the same emotion, the same meaning as he did winning for Ferrari as a factory driver at Le Mans, overall victory. That's the big, hells yeah. There are plenty of F1 drivers who have left Formula One and gone on to win in Le Mans in various categories, but it's different, I think, now with this hypercar class. I think it's very different.
Yeah, but I think if you're a factory driver at any level, you're unbelievable.
No, but mate, tell me, who were the drivers for the Ferrari GTE AF Corsa victory in 2019
I don't follow it.
No, but I think you don't follow now, but the overall winners of Le Mans have far more gravitas than the class winners.
Yeah.
And there's always one or two drivers within that. So, you know, Andy Wallace, when he won. I mean, he had teammates, and I don't know who they are. Martin Brundle, Derek Bell. Like, they always have teammates. There's always one. And Giovinazzi, unfortunately, is getting that. You know, poor Collado and Guidi, who are his teammates. He'll be remembered as the Giovinazzi one.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is, you know, they carry that gravitas where you might hear that, oh, that great year where Aston Martin and Corvette were racing to the checkered flag. Like, it was amazing. Who were the drivers? Do we all remember? Of course, people will.
Yeah.
But I think overall winners have a longer shelf life.
Yeah, yeah.
In the world of racing. So to go back, so I saw the little Alpine electric hatch thing, which looked really cool. Definitely more concept car than I realised, and is big. It's the one that's based on the Renault 5.
It is quite.
Yeah, it sort of felt. It was next to an A110, so it's hard to tell, and it was on a stand.
Did it look like a hatchback, or it looked like a...
More Ioniq 5 looking and feeling. I would love to look at the dimensions. As I say, it was next to an A110, and it was on a stand.
Wow.
So it was really hard to judge, but it was definitely big. Definitely bigger than I realised. It's not Fiat 500E size, I don't think. So the new Ford Mustang Dark Horse... finished. Remember, we saw it in the LA Auto Show.
We did see that, yeah.
We saw it finished, got inside, sat in it, popped open the bonnet and everything. One thing which is really cool, drift mode is back in a Ford product, so after the Focus RS. They have engineered it into a hydraulic handbrake.
Oh, wow, crash.
So literally. how that's going to be insurable, I have no idea.
Just have your mate sitting next to you go, what's this done?
Yeah. So you can literally be like, so that was Flipping super cool. And then, of course, the big car, which we should probably touch on, that was there hiding at the Porsche stand, the Mission X.
Is that new electric thing?
So this obviously got unveiled at Porsche's big 75th anniversary birthday.
What a
shame. Just before Le Mans. What a shame.
Oh, yeah. They're making such a fuss over a big electric car.
Oh don't be like that. Oh,
yeah, well, no. You're at a prestige petrol event.
No. It's happened before the event, mate. This was launched at a completely separate event, Porsche 70th. It was just happened to be there lurking in the background. You couldn't go and see it. The public couldn't see it. It was invite only. So forget, it's not tied to Le Mans. It's nothing to do with Le Mans. It just happened last week.
We're really about to go in on one then.
We haven't spoken about it.
We haven't spoken about it.
So we spoke a lot about the anticipation for this event, all the rumours. We were convinced it was going to be the 911 ST.
Yeah.
And then people started saying, no, ST's been held back for... Pebble Beach, Monterey Spike on Spike's Car Radio, our good friends. He was saying that he's heard as well that's been held back for Car Week. So it was like, what's going to be unveiled? And then we finally see this Mission X concept, which fundamentally is a successor for the 918. It's the next hypercar. They I don't think they said it as much. They definitely insinuated hardcore that this is what it is. I don't think we got any sort of production timeline. We didn't get a kind of year. It looked production car ready. My God, this looked nearly like a finished article to me.
They're normally about every 10 years. So, we're 2023 now, so it'd be 20... be next year-ish, 20...
We should see a production version probably next year.
Yeah, they're normally every 10 years, aren't they?
Yeah. So, what were your thoughts? Because obviously we were hyped and unexpected, and the car sort of broke the internet for half a minute. When you saw it, when we first learned about it, what was your gut initial reaction?
I paid it hardly any attention.
Really?
Hardly any, yeah. Because one, I'm not going to get one.
You're not going to get an allocation.
No chance. Yeah. I wouldn't want it anyway because it's electric. It just doesn't appeal to me at all.
Okay, let's deep dive on this, and I'm going to try not to get angry and frustrated. Wish me luck, people. So, okay, I understand the not paying attention because you're not going to get one. Like, I'm sort of with you. Like,
I just don't... It doesn't appeal to me.
And it's in concept form, fine.
Yeah.
So, were you disheartened because of all of our expectations when I went, this is what they've launched? Because we were talking about it in a WhatsApp group. When I went, this is the car, were you like, oh, like, were you hoping it was going to be the ST?
I don't think I replied, did I? Did I even reply? Paul normally goes, ping, 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 ping. I don't think I probably said anything.
Yeah, you probably didn't say anything.
No, it's like, okay.
Because I will admit, I was a bit like, oh, okay. as in like, oh, it's just a concept type thing.
Oh, right.
I know it's not just a concept because it will lead to that production car. It looks so production ready. But I was disappointed that it wasn't more just because we had stupidly built up our own expectations.
Yeah, maybe this is why Porsche ain't doing very good now, because they're concentrating on making electric cars. They're going to be an electric car maker.
Actually, this is why I'm going to fight you. We've known this. Porsche have come out and said by 2025, 2028, like 75% of their fleet will be electric. This is the direction they're going in.
And most of the time that makes sense.
And the Taycan, brilliant. We love it. We talk about how much we absolutely adore it. But electric Cayman, we are super excited for. Loads of potential. Really fun, really cool. Little electric sports car. And a Macan. Electric Macan,
yeah.
Brilliant.
As long as it does the range.
As long as it does the range. Perfect. 100%.
Yeah.
Porsche, we love... apart from their racing history, apparently, for their development, their road cars, all these different things. And we have to believe development of batteries, where we're getting solid state batteries, etc., so that they will improve, they will become lighter, and maybe they're on the cusp of that Porsche. Maybe they've got lithium sodium, the sodium ion. Oh, I get so confused with battery technology. Maybe they've got the next generation of battery technology ready to be lighter, to go further, etc.
Yeah.
To immediately just go, don't like it, it's electric. Is that not a bit naive, potentially?
No. Because not as far as I'm concerned, because I've not really driven an electric car yet, which I think I'd love to own this.
That's what I can.
Yeah, but I would. but if I'd love to, I'd bought one now. So if you had a gun to my, I've said this. This is what I've said. If you had a gun to my head today, and you said you have to go and buy an electric car, I would go and buy a Taycan. But no one's got a gun to my head. I can still buy a combustion car. That's what I will continue to do.
But you're not buying a Taycan because of the lifestyle, because of the infrastructure, what it means to run an electric car, not because of the car itself, but because of everything around it.
Yeah, but it's the if I had a choice still at the moment, and I do have a choice, I would still buy a combustion car over an electric car, even if it was perfect.
For sure. Okay,
and
fine.
You probably would as well.
Yes, but I've been speaking about it a lot recently. I'm very keen to run an electric car at the moment. I am very keen, but amongst other cars. I would be the same. Yeah, okay.
I would be exactly the same.
So, the reason that I am not immediately knocking... electric. Firstly, Porsche are trying to say that they want a one-to-one rate ratio, something like 1,500 kilos to 1,500 horsepower.
Yeah. For the road.
For the road.
Yeah. You
know.
Crash.
But any hypercar, I mean, freaking SF90 is 1,000 horsepower, so, you know, they got to do something
one
silly.
One-to-one, though. Nearly one-to-two.
No, fair.
It's incredible, one-to-one.
Which does suggest next generation of battery technology, so that could be a range of 500
Rimac,
miles. Right? Yeah, exactly, Rimac and helping with the batteries and the development. So, you know, we could see 500 miles, 1,500 horsepower, a car that weighs 1,500 kilos, that's a good weight. That's a good weight, 1,500 kilos for a hypercar.
It's very good weight.
Yeah.
So most supercars are.
So I think there is potential. We know all the benefits driving dynamically that electric can deliver in terms of immediate throttle response, torquiness, pace off the line. They can engineer in some sound in some shape or form to make that exhilarate. Like, I am all with the hope and the excitement and the, like, if someone's going to get it right, I feel like Porsche are in a good place to nail the electric hypercar type thing.
All right, you've convinced me. I'll have one. How much is it?
It will be around 2.5 mil, I reckon. That I don't blame you. I say like the whole, you know, it's like Sport Classic. You know, I love the sport. I'm never going to get a Sport Classic, so I can't allow myself to fully love it. Like, so I definitely appreciate where you're coming from in that sense. And that is our rhetoric on this podcast. If you haven't listened to us before, when it comes to Koenigseggs, Hennessy's, Pagani's, even Bugatti's, we don't tend to give it a whole chunk of time because for us, this is us having a conversation between two friends. They're not cars that we're ever really getting excited
about.
It's
not relatable, yeah.
It's not relatable for us, for our experience, you know.
We can get excited on the internet and everything, but it's not relate. And it actually, if I...
You know what's way more relatable? £350,000 pistas.
But it is more relatable. I mean, how many people watch us that drive great big hypercars?
Yeah, but how many people watch us with £500 Puntos as well?
But if I had £2.5 million to spend on a car today, on a car, you're not going to believe what I'm going to say. I'd probably buy the Valkyrie at the moment.
Oh, you're not going to go 1 mile.
But they don't work, apparently. Is insane.
Yeah, but apparently they don't work. I've spoken to now four owners that Aston Martin have been out to see them six times to replace parts, to change things.
That's it. They're no good. Then I'll just stick with a laugh.
Couldn't get a laugh to work, Mill.
You could have.
You can't now.
What, the coupes and the one two? They can't be.
Gone. You want me to check?
They can't be.
You want me to check?
More than £2.5 million now, are they? Oh, I'll stick with me 918 then.
Ferrari for sale.
I'll stick with a 918, mate. I mean, I have some change.
James edition is always
buy another house.
Price on request. Here's a nice coupe for $4 million.
No. Dollars.
In Canada. $4 million in Canada. Price on request in Spain. Price on request in Spain. Wow. $3.5 million US dollars in Dubai.
Oh, they've gone.
$4 million in Florida.
Wow.
Almost all coupes.
Wow. They've really, I mean, cause that weren't long ago, mate.
But also, mate, I think one thing which we haven't spoken about and haven't realised, and we can do another episode on. Virgin Media just texted me saying, we've got an outage in your area. How predictable. Damn you, Virgin Media. The UK car market at that level is dead compared to Europe, US. Our market is dead because of the Brexit and import-export and right-hand drive and everything like that. We are so far behind values of so many cars around the world. So you might be able to find a UK £2.5 million laugh potentially.
Yeah.
But everywhere else in the world, they're double the price. They're gone.
Right.
Gone, mate. Enzo's as well.
Really?
Yeah, Enzo's around the world gone. So, I mean, not that either of us have that kind of money to be spending on a car, but depressing thought. So yeah, Mission X, I think, look, I'm really excited about new era Porsche. I'm not going to sit here and bash it. There's so many products coming down the line that I can't wait for. I was disappointed because I had convinced myself there was going to be six new cars and we were going to see this and we're going to see that and endless things that we could buy. And yeah, we were just left with a concept that theoretically will come to production. But I also thought the design was a little bit of a mishmash of some other cars. It wasn't necessarily Porsche enough for me. But I still am, waiting with great anticipation as to what is around the corner from that brand. And I think we're going to see a lot more cars released. Just to touch on that, I've finally booked in a Sport Classic loan car.
Have you?
For later in the summer, which I can't wait for. I'm trying to work out what to do with it, that car. Because obviously it's kind of ultimate road-going GT car. I'm trying to think where to take it. I don't want to go for a million, but like maybe I'll do Scotland in it or something like that. I guess that would be a good test for it, wouldn't it? Like sort of North Coast.
Drive it right to the coast and right in the sea.
Jog on.
take it to Anglesey, go flat out and end up in the river.
I'm a good driver, so I wouldn't. one final car I want to touch on in the world of Porsche.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to do is a bit of a investment advice, which we should never give and do not listen to this at all. Quirky car that I think might be one to keep an eye on. Boxster 25th anniversary edition. You know which one I mean by that? It's the GTS 4-litre Boxster, limited by numbers. The one with the goldish wheels and the red interior. You know the one I mean?
With the stupid bubble at the back.
It's got a stupid
bubble on the... I know, that was a speedster.
No, yeah, just a normal Boxster, but it's the 25th anniversary, so limited livery. So I say they all got red interiors. I think you could have it silver or black on paint. What?
How old?
It's a new car, GTS 4 litre. I mean, it came out last year or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
like 25th anniversary, like brand new GTS 4 litre,
right,
but limited in numbers. Okay. Blah, blah. They're on the used market for sort of GTS price, 66 grand, 68 grand, something like that. I think as and when they trickle down, because people don't seem to be paying them a lot of attention, and they get to sort of late 40s, 50s, that could be a car that you
could... 4 litre car?
It's a GTS 4 litre. It is a GTS 4 litre, but numbered.
Sounds cheap to me, 60 odd grand.
I agree. This is exactly what I'm saying. But you know, especially if you look at sort of elsewhere, does the standard one, like people are really overlooking them. And if you look at limited numbered anniversary Porsches across the board, they're usually pretty good bets. I genuinely was looking at it, but like, I do not need another two-seater car. I do not need another two-seater car. I do not need another two-seater car. But I was looking at it, but like, that's a great summer car and something that I think you're going to be fairly all right in. I'm not going to tell you you're going to make money. But I think that's quite an interesting car.
Right.
Do you want to go splitsies on that?
No.
Okay.
Well, where are we going in that?
Anywhere looks great.
A couple of hairdressers with no hair. In that car together.
That's cliched. I think Boxers are great cars. I love a Boxster. Anyway, that brings an end to today's Le Mans focused episode. But yeah, it's such a blast that we can. I just thought it was very interesting for what it means for sports car manufacturers, endurance. Like, you know, it's a fascinating moment as to whether it's actually important or not. And that'll probably be the title of this episode. You know, Ferrari won Le Mans. Do we care? we will be back with you next week for our Maserati Press Day special.
Oh yeah,
which we were recording this week. It's going to be super interesting. I have no idea how that's going to pan out. By the way, like, we're just going to go mic'd up and just get behind the wheels of stuff and just take you behind the scenes on a press day.
Yeah.
No holds barred. I'm doing a main channel video on the Grecale Trofeo. I'm going to learn how to bloody pronounce that, I guess, tomorrow. So that'll be a main channel video. It'll be an honest review with Tony with me. So we'll give you true thoughts on that car. And then the podcast will follow up next week with behind the scenes. We jump in and out of loads of different Maseratis.
Oh, we'll smash it, mate.
We'll have a good time.
Yeah, lovely time.
So yeah, subscribe to us now. If you're watching here on YouTube, turn on notifications so you don't miss all those future episodes. And then if you're listening to us, you can keep doing so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. Recast, stay tuned for early access to these episodes, including that Maserati episode. You'll get very early access to that one, I think. And follow us on Instagram, behindtheglass_podcast.
We've got a new Instagram page.
Yeah, building a nice little audience there for some, you know, reminder clips. Actually, I'm posting quite a funny one. You were just talking about EVs and Taycans. I posted quite a funny one about you talking about that about a couple of years ago. About Taycans.
Has my opinion changed?
Well, you ripped it apart. You said you couldn't care less about it. But sounds a bit like the Mission X. So like, watch this space. Anyway, we'll catch up with you next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.